Semrov. Today I'm bringing you a recording of the Moby Dick book release show from Tangible Books on Saturday, May 10th. It was me and publisher Mallory Smart of Maudlin House and a capacity crowd. We had a good talk and I did a little bit of reading. And here you go. No need for mood lighting.
But like, if there were mood lighting, what color would you pick for Moby Dick?
Oh, is this like the aura question you were talking about before?
Yeah, let's do the aura question.
I have no fucking idea. I'm not into that fruity shit. You tell me. Like, you would know more about it than me.
I don't know shit. When that girl walked up to me at AWP, I had no idea. I was just like,
How did you choose her aura then?
I just stared at her for a very long time until I could see which one she was looking at the most.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it was more like a scam artist.
Kind of like a psychic. Be like, I feel your body language is going towards mm-hmm. this book. That one's your aura.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Hey there. Hi. Well, cool.
That's why I asked that nobody ever
Nobody will sit up front. I'm just going to get rid of these four chairs and put them in the back.
Then you'll be
up front. Now we inevitably become there. Well, it's like the VIP. It's like, did you have people that you
used right. to be yeah, we like, should, yeah, we should put name tags on those. Right. Yeah. Preserved. Yeah. Like, who will go up here? Like, the mayor? Like, I don't know.
I don't know what kinds of important people are going to show up after.
Yeah. Are there any important people in Chicago? I don't know.
I'm not in Chicago, but we did just have our Pope.
We got the Pope.
Oh, yeah. The Pope. Yeah, this is the seat for the Chicago Pope. Yeah.
Well, you know, put one out for the Pope.
Yeah. That's right. Well, I guess we should start this thing, huh?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for being here. I'm presuming you're all here because you want to hear about this Moby Dick thing that Mallory and I are putting out. Right? Or are you in the wrong place? Okay, good. Well, thank you for being here. My name's Dimitri. This is Mallory.
Nice to meet you.
I illustrated the book and she published it. That's why we're up here.
Not just a random person. You didn't just select someone and be like, and you sit here.
Yeah, you drew the short straw.
I probably would. That's my luck. No, I'm Mallory Smart. I'm a writer and also the editor-in-chief of Maudlin House. That's all I have to say. Go on.
That's it?
Your turn.
My turn? Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I was gonna tell you guys a little bit about how this whole thing happened, why I decided to illustrate Moby Dick. So, I don't know if you remember, last November, there was this horrible thing that happened at the beginning of November. So the day after that thing happened, I unsubscribed from the New York Times and stopped reading the news. And I started searching for a thing that I could disappear into. And I read this article about these tech bro assholes bragging about making like millions republishing classic books. And, you know, it was a scam and it was lies, but it planted a seed, and it linked to this site called Project Gutenberg, which has thousands and thousands of free ebooks and audiobooks. And I started looking through it, and it occurred to me that I could make like a cool thing. And I make art, so make an illustrated thing. And of course, at the top of all these lists is this book, is Moby Dick. You know, arguably the best American book ever written. You know, maybe. But a lot of people, it's in the conversation anyways. But so I started rereading it and started making drawings. And before I knew it, I was way, way, way into it. And Mallory and I have been friends for a few years. And I was texting her about this new thing I was working on. And she got excited about it. And then like a week after that, we had a book contract. Because my original idea was to go like the tech bros were talking about and just put it up on, you know, Amazon, put it up, you know. But she
I
wanted
been better.
So you're saying this was a mistake?
You'd be raking it in probably more. Yeah.
Yeah, where the fuck's my money? I did all this work.
And at warp speed, I mean, you pitched the book to me, and like 3 weeks later, you're like, and I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Moby Dick, you did all of Moby Dick.
Well, it's amazing what you can do if you don't pay attention to like the news or social media. Come sit up front. There's seats up here.
Yeah, that's what happens to
They're
lady
all
rivals.
Avoiding it. You get welcome.
If you want to know warp speed, though, seriously, like before we even finished this, he had already done Babbitt and the Marvel one.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this was the first of now. I'm actually on my fifth public domain book now. I'm just keep doing this. And it's good therapy, and it's like, you know, as my dad used to say, it keeps you off the street, you know, and getting into like bad thought patterns, you know, which the news will inspire anybody with even remote bit of conscience, I'd say, you know. So yeah, this is my coping mechanism, basically, is illustrating and redesigning these books.
I think the interesting thing I have to ask, because I don't think I've ever asked you this throughout this entire process. How is it I've known you this long and I never knew that you loved Moby Dick? Like, it never once came up.
I don't know. I mean,
I have a cat named Starbuck.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I think, like, actual people that become friends and talk, they don't, it's not like they trade like you know, resumes or something, or like top tens or something. I don't know.
I feel like you should. Maybe that should be like just a regular, like, so what's your favorite book right away thing. I don't know.
That's what you see.
What,
like,
book is your aura?
that's the, like, the sad shit of, like, if you know, if you work in bars or restaurants and you eavesdrop on first dates, you know, from the people that met on the internet, they have all this data about each other, but they don't really know each other. They have all this information, and it's like, yeah, like, so if we were going on a date, you would know that, like, Moby Dick was a book that I liked.
Has anyone ever asked you on a date?
No, no, I've never been on a date.
Do you do, like, a screening? Like, will she ask me about books?
I'm still wishing and hoping.
That's why you don't know the mood lighting.
Yes. No, I... The reason, maybe one of the reasons you probably didn't know that, is that anybody that will ask me a question like, what's your favorite, fill in the blank, my mind just goes totally blank. It did occur to me, so, like, you know, I chose to reread Moby Dick. The first time I read Moby Dick was in my 30s, and I was going through a divorce, and it helped me get through the divorce. So for anybody, I don't know if all of you have read it or remember any of it, but it's like a lot about failure, about shit going wrong, really wrong. And it helped. So I figured, you know, it helped me through the death of a marriage, so it could help me through the death of a country, you know? Hmm. Like that.
Take a little bit of your whiskey right now.
Just to lighten the mood a little. Yeah.
Lighten that mood.
So what's it been like working with me?
Amusing.
Yeah.
Always amusing.
Somehow we're still friends.
Honestly, it's because, like, I think I'm the one person who doesn't take you seriously at all. For some people. Like, you know, yeah, I'm sure that you probably come off as maybe, like, standoffish or saying to some people, or I don't know. Whereas I just don't give a fuck. So I think we match that well. I don't give a fuck, you don't give a fuck, it works.
Okay. Interesting theory.
I don't know. You're willing to say, like, horrible, horrible things about, like, my taste in movies, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever.
What horrible things? Yeah. What did I say that was horrible?
I don't think I've ever heard you say a positive thing about the Scream franchise.
Oh, yeah. So Mallory's favorite, you know, thing is Scream. And
it's my favorite horror. And actually, that's not even accurate.
No?
We hosted a horror movie podcast for 4 years, and you forget my favorite horror movie. if we were married, we would be getting divorced, and you'd have to read this again.
You think that's a basis of a marriage? Ask your actual husband. Is that the basis of?
I don't know.
Well, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite horror movie. No.
See, they're getting divorced right after this talk.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
See?
Yeah. Well, we did a whole episode
on it. Yeah, I had nothing but good things to say about that, because that's an actually great movie. Yeah. Not like Scream.
But like a good relationship, I've dragged him to the last two movies.
Yeah, she made me go to the fucking Logan Square Theater to see Scream 17 or whatever the fuck it was.
And Alamo Drafthouse.
And what?
Alamo Drafthouse. We did the one.
Oh, yeah, we did Alamo. Yeah, for the other one, yeah.
I feel like this is no longer about Moby Dick. It's about our very strange, like, relationship.
Seats up front, guys. Don't you want to be the head of the class? These are actual friends of mine. You don't have to be shy. You can sit up. You're going to pretend not to know each other? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, no, I didn't talk shit about every movie you ever liked. That's not true.
This is such a talking great, shit like, is literary fun. Thing.
Yeah.
Just saying, yeah, talking shit about my horror movies.
You brought it up.
I did. You know, I did. This
is a door that you opened.
And if you want to hear us talk like this a lot, just look up that horror cast. We don't even talk about the movies. We just talk shit about each other.
Yep.
A very dysfunctional relationship.
That's every good podcast.
Yeah.
Is that.
So you really didn't, like, read Moby Dick until you were in your 30s?
No, which I think was a really good thing. I think it's a big mistake to make, like, children, like high school children, read that book. I don't know that they have any basis of anything that happened in their life to prepare them for that what that book is about. Or the fact that it's so digressive that it just goes on all these tangents, you know? Yeah, so I read it the first time when I was 33, and as I said, before going through a divorce. And it was the perfect therapy, that book. And yeah, and diving back into it was great. It's even stranger than I remember it. And I mean, one of the things I'm hoping for with this, the new edition, is to like introduce it to some people that are put off by maybe its length, or, you know, it's a thing that can be intimidating for people that are not used to reading long books, right? I don't know. I mean, and this one's got lots of pictures in it, so they can take breaks.
Very, very fun.
Dimitri, can I ask you a question?
Of course, yeah.
So, I read the book, and the way you just said, like, the digressions, yeah. I feel like that resonated with me, because throughout the book, they go into the history of whaling, what different types of whales are and whatnot.
Like, a couple of seats up here. Come grab them. Sorry.
No, just like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, because it's not really an end-to-end story. It's like, there's like all this interjection. Of
no,
like,
well, I think those are the best parts. I think the actual, like, the A story, you know, the narrative is the least interesting part of it. You know, the narrative is there because a book has to have a structure, you know. It has to have a beginning, middle, and end, so they make it into a sea voyage.
What inspired the illustrations the most for you?
Oh, it was totally intuitive. I would just read. So all the illustrations pretty much are based on either period photography or period other things that I could find that I researched. I don't think any of them, with few exceptions, were from imagination, quote unquote, or whatever. That's like a thing I don't have anyways. So, it's all from some kind of visual source. So, yeah, my idea was not to, like, kind of make a drawing of, like, some key scene or something. It was just a way, like, an add-on kind of to make you feel like you were there, you know? Because the other encouraging thing about working on this is, so there's a great, great illustrated version from 1930, illustrated by Rockwell Kent, with beautiful wood engravings, but I don't draw anything like him, and it's been almost 100 years, So I felt like the coast was clear. And then, like, every movie and miniseries based on Moby Dick is fucking awful. It's really, really bad. And I think the problem is that it's a book that happens in these digressions. It's not really an external thing. It's all in people's minds, you know? That's why you can't really make a movie of it, you know? But you can make a book with some pictures in it, I'm hoping. That's my theory anyways.
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, though, you did just say at Jackalope that there was a Barrymore.
Yeah, the first one was called, it was a silent movie called The Sea Beast. And it's, they made up, the screenplay has nothing to do with the book, really. There's like a love story. And for anybody that's read Moby Dick, there's not a single woman in Moby Dick. Ahab's wife is mentioned, but she doesn't have like a speaking part or anything. But I mean, there's no women in there. Yeah.
Sea like superstitions. It's dangerous to have a woman on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bad. No, it's about men and men being with men.
A lot of homoerotic shit. Yeah. I was getting some.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you want to read it a particular way, it's a pretty gay book. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so I've watched clips of that, the Sea Beast and some other ones that I hadn't seen. There's the most famous one is the terrible John Huston movie with Gregory Peck as Ahab. It's a really bad movie.
I've somehow avoided all Moby Dick movies.
You don't need any of them. Yeah they suck.
Yeah. I can't imagine it being a movie. I mean, as we all discussed, digressions and... It's not a book that's supposed to... Yeah, you're supposed to get lost in it. There's no narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, the A story of... Yeah, it could be like a 10-minute short or something. You know, there's a guy and he signs up on a whale voyage and there's a crazy captain and who's cursed by a whale and then they have a battle with the whale and then the whale kills him. The end. You know, like, that's not what this book is. You know?
You did a TikTok about... There you go.
Yeah. Did you put any TikToks of Moby Dick? No?
I do not do TikTok.
What kind of promoter are
you? I'm horrible. I mean, though, like, for all the press I've done, though, it's this is not what you've read in high school. You've drawn...
Make it safe for the young people?
You know, like, no, just, like, random shit like that, or for those of you who pretended you read Moby Dick, now's your chance, because most people have lied and said they've read it.
Yeah, we were talking earlier at the coffee shop about, like, wondering how many people have actually read Moby Dick. I think a lot of people just lie about it, but, like...
You should have a section in the store here of books you've lied about reading, because I'm sure there are a lot of books like that.
Oh, yeah.
All the classics, like, 1984, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure you've read it.
Yeah, I bet a lot of people lie about reading that book. I don't know. But... You know, I tried to make it with the layout, like a lot of my, I've seen many, many editions of Moby Dick, and this is a thing that happens with the public domain books, because anybody can publish them. There's like literally 7,000 to 10,000 different editions of Moby Dick, and most of them are really hard to read, like actually physically read. So I kind of concentrated on making a thing that was at least semi-easy to go through. And because, like, as we've been talking about, it's so digressive, I think if people approach it in a, you know, like, with an open mind, they can read it the way that we read so many things now, like, in bits and parts, you know? Because it's not really a straight narrative. It's basically, he used his era's version of Wikipedia, and he stuck all this stuff, all these random facts in his book, half of which are apparently not even true, you know, and that's like all the best parts of the book, and he kind of stitched it together. So it should appeal to people now, like if they're introduced to it in some other way than it's been introduced, not as a boring thing that you have to do in high school, you know, for homework.
There's no assignment after this?
Yeah, there's a book report. You won't be allowed to leave the store unless you read.
That's why people were getting the books, so they could like be like, now turn to page whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You teach your lesson.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So did you ever think that you'd be publishing Moby Dick, or did you ever have ideas of republishing classics?
I never thought of doing, like, public domain books. No, that never occurred to me. It wasn't until you sent me that article, and I was like, wow, Dimitri's like, haven't, like, when you said you wanted to do it, I was like, wait, where is this tracking? Because you talk shit about that idea, and then you did it.
Well, because, yeah, what they were talking about, what the tech bros were talking about was horrible, you know? And, like, yeah, I'm sure everybody's had this experience. Like, you can order something, you know, especially, like, off Amazon, and, like, half the pages are upside down, or, like, it's just really shitty because what happens on Amazon is there's a machine that you press a button and it shits out a book, you know? And they, you know, if it's wrong, you just complain and they send you another one. They don't even want you to send it back. Mm-hmm. Books are just a loss leader from Amazon. It's a way to get you through the door. Mm-hmm. And that's what the tech bros were bragging about. Mm-hmm. Like how little work they had to do and how much money they were making. And I'm sure they were lying. I don't think they were making millions. But that's what I expect from this this attraction. So my first royalty check has to be in six or seven, eight figures
that being
minimum,
publisher,
right?
That badass. Oh, yeah. Dragging a Logan Theater. I'm a millionaire.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I want to start at the top.
Mm-hmm. Definitely start. Why did you pick us, by the way?
It was just a text.
Like, you just happened to be messaging me and be like, oh, do you want it?
I really didn't think that anybody would be publishing it. I mean, I haven't had a publisher that wasn't me in, like, 7 years. So, yeah, there's a bunch of other books on that table, and those are books that I've published myself in various ways. And most of those ways have been the opposite of kind of like they're not available on Amazon. They're limited edition. They're like offset printed, not digitally printed. I've kind of done everything the opposite of like the mass market. But when I came up with this idea of doing new versions of public domain books, I figured that it should be as accessible as possible. So I had to sign the deal with the devil, and like I opened a fucking Amazon account in Maudlin House. No, you're saving me from the
devil. I'm saving you for the devil for this one. For the other ones?
Well, actually, that's the thing about it. It's so, yeah, like I finished this one, and then I wanted to keep going, so I did Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis and put that one up on Amazon. And then I did a contemporary book called The Marvel Universe Origin Stories by Bruce Wagner, which he put up on a website in public domain forever because his publisher refused to publish it because sensitivity readers told him that it wasn't acceptable. And he got pissed off and he left them and he just made it available forever on the public domain. So I made that, and then he got a copy of it and got really excited and got me a deal with his current publisher to republish it. So the version there is gonna disappear very soon because we're redoing it. Oh. And they're publishing another book that I did called The Suicide's Grave. Let's see, it's got a very long title. The Suicide's Grave... being the private diaries and confessions of a justified sinner, which is a book from 1824 from Scotland, and is sort of like a gothic horror about this guy who decides that like God has commanded him to like go on a killing spree, and it's said to be a big inspiration for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, among other things. It's great. It's a great crazy fucking book. And that'll be out sometime in October. And then I'm working on the William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury right now. Whoa. And I'm going to do As I Lay Dying also. Ooh. So, yeah, there's more coming.
I set a fire in my backyard doing a homework assignment for As I Lay Dying.
Why did you set... Wait, why?
It's for the fire scene.
Oh, it's been a while. I haven't reread that one since I was like a teenager. So
it was
technically
my brother's book project. But yeah, I was like, yeah, let's just set the thing on fire and yeah.
Did you like film it or something?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And oh, my parents didn't know about it either until they found it on the computer, and I was like...
Until you burned their house down, and then they found out?
Ended up getting to the neighbors, like, because it was windy, and I was like, oh, hell no. And they were, like, the old, like, Star Wars figurines as the characters, and,
oh,
yeah.
Wow, so you made, like, a whole movie of it,
yeah,
basically?
We made a whole little mini thing.
That's awesome.
As I Lay Dying, good book.
As I Lay Dying is great.
I made an even better movie, clearly.
I don't know if there's a... Is there a movie of As I Lay Dying?
Well,
James Franco
than
probably
me
made it.
Setting on
he's
fire
such a fucking Renaissance
Wars
man.
Shit.
He makes all the classics. That's my competition, really.
Yeah.
Fucking James Franco. All right.
You think you've had enough whiskey where you could read?
Yeah, I don't know. Does anybody have questions? So I was gonna read a chapter from this, but we can talk some more after, or I can talk more now.
Well, I was wondering when you were saying before that it was about that the, because I haven't read the book yet, that it was about failure. How does, in what ways that do you see that as it's about failure? Is it the, is
well,
it like a,
it's a guy that's kind of lost in his life, and he wants to go and do this thing, and he's attracted to, you know, Captain Ahab, the horrible captain of the ship, is obsessed with what he thinks is like this creature that has taken his, you know, like has wronged him, and he's obsessed with getting revenge. And instead of doing his job, which was to collect, you know, to catch whales and harvest whale oil, you know, he's taking his poor crew around the world over and over searching for this mythical whale that has wronged him. And the narrator is along for the ride, is watching all this. And this is supposed to be like the hero. I mean, who's the hero? We can be here all night, you know, for weeks talking about it. Yeah. It's a like as any good art, it raises a lot of questions with a lot fewer answers. But to me, it seemed like, at least the first time I read it, it felt like something a lot. It's about failure and a lot about, you know, the fragility of the male ego, which should always be, we should be reminded of.
I feel like you should be reading the homoerotic scene then instead.
Which, wait,
okay,
what's
yeah, there are quite a few.
There's more than one.
There are more than one.
Wait,
oh my God,
so you're tying the fragility of the male ego with
a little bit
back with
in
homosexuality?
The 19th century?
No,
yes.
But I don't think sexual orientation has anything to do
in
with
the 19th century.
No, with whether a male ego is fragile or not.
I don't know. You sure?
You think so? No.
Speaking to the man, yeah.
So you think straight men are really like not fragile?
I think like there's the fragile of appearing that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about
it. You'll have to think about it. We're just going to take a drinking break. You.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll answer this by when you do the reading. But do you have like a favorite bit? Like, obviously there are like pretty defined bits. Like the bit all about like, here's what whales are. Or like the bits that are like, here's how whaling happens. Like there's the different digressions he goes on, but do you have a favorite like...
I don't know. Like I was talking earlier about like where Mallory was asking me like how come you didn't tell me that like Moby Dick was a book you loved? Like, yeah, it's so kind of not circumstantial. What's the word? It depends what day or what time you ask me, you know?
Yeah.
And because there's so many kind of tangents in this book, yeah, I couldn't even tell you. Like I've Yeah, the thing I chose I'm gonna read is not about you know harpoons or cetology, it's about something else. But yeah, I like all the kind of the sidetracks better, than the main story, you know. I think, but so yeah, let me read this thing and to get
yeah,
that.
So yeah, I'm still shocked you didn't pick the monstrous illustrations of whales, but yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what you liked, right? Yeah, so he's got this great chapter about like talking shit about the people of the past and how they didn't know what whales looked like.
Just so the irony of someone who did a redesigned, illustrated Moby Dick.
But no, but those are. I copied all the sea monsters the way they used to draw them. You know, they were drawn by people that had never seen a whale. You know, so they had to just imagine it, and they made up all kinds of goofy shit. I don't even remember what chapter. Do you remember what chapter where that is? Or?
55, I think.
Chapter
55, I think. Yeah. I was going through all sorts of them before.
Oh yeah, this is a good time to say. So originally, when I was planning this event, Mallory was going to read something from the book, but a couple of days ago, she texted me that she wasn't going to do it.
Actually, that was last night.
Okay.
That's why there's a chair up here for me. No, I don't know about anyone else here, but you know, I'm a writer, so I know how to write, read what I've written and everything. I've never read, 19th century literature out loud to myself. And I'm just, rehearsing as much as possible, and I sound like I'm a high schooler who was picked on in English to read a passage.
Yeah, so I don't know if anybody can see, but, this is on page 308. Things like that, monsters like that, that's what they imagined, a whale was, you know? And it's just Melville talking shit about the stupid people of the past, kind of, you know? Which is fun.
That's so peak Melville.
Yeah. Where was the? Oh, here it is. But what I'm going to read is chapter 65, and it's called "The Whale as a Dish," and it's dedicated to all the vegetarians here. So here we go. That mortal man should feed upon the creature that feeds his lamp, and like Stubb, eat him by his own light. As you may say, this seems so outlandish a thing that one must needs go a little into the history and philosophy of it. It is upon record that 3 centuries ago, the tongue of the right whale was esteemed a great delicacy in France and commanded large prices there. Also that in Henry VIII's time, a certain cook of the court obtained a handsome reward for inventing an admirable sauce to be eaten with barbecued porpoises, which, you remember, are species of whale. Porpoises, indeed, are to this day considered fine eating. The meat is made into balls about the size of billiard balls, and being well seasoned and spiced, might be taken for turtle balls or veal balls. The old monks of Dunfermline were very fond of them. They had a great porpoise grant from the crown. The fact is that among his hunters, at least, the whale would by all hands be considered a noble dish, were there not so much of him. But when you come to sit down before a meat pie nearly 100 feet long, it takes away your appetite. Only the most unprejudiced of men, like Stubb, nowadays partake of cooked whales. But the Eskimo are not so fastidious. We all know how they live upon whales and have rare old vintages of prime old train oil. Zagranda, one of their most famous doctors, recommends strips of blubber for infants as being exceedingly juicy and nourishing. And this reminds me that certain Englishmen who long ago were accidentally left in Greenland by a whaling vessel, that these men actually lived for several months on the moldy scraps of whales which had been left ashore after trying out the blubber. Among the Dutch whalemen, these scraps are called fritters, which indeed they greatly resemble, being brown and crisp and smelling something like old Amsterdam housewives' donuts or oleacooks when fresh. Yum, huh? They have such an eatable look that the most self-denying stranger can hardly keep his hands off. But what further depreciates the whale as a civilized dish is his exceeding richness. He's the great prize ox of the sea, too fat to be delicately good. Look at his hump, which would be as fine eating as the buffalo's, which is an esteemed, a rare dish. We're not such a solid pyramid of fat. But the spermaceti itself, how bland and creamy that is. Like the transparent, half-jellied white meat of a coconut in the third month of its growth. Yet far too rich to supply a substitute for butter. Nevertheless, many whalemen have a method of absorbing it into some other substance, and then partaking of it. In the long try-watches of the night, it is common is a common thing for the seamen to dip their ship biscuit into the huge oil pots and let them fry there a while. Many a good supper have I thus made. In the case of a small sperm whale, the brains are accounted a fine dish. The casket of the skull is broken into with an axe, and the two plump whitish lobes, being withdrawn, precisely resembling two large puddings, they are then mixed with flour and cooked into a most delectable mess. In flavor, somewhat resembling calf's head, which is quite a dish among some epicures. And everyone knows that some young bucks among the epicures, by continually dining upon calves' brains, by and by get to have a little brains of their own, so as to be able to tell a calf's head from their own heads, which indeed requires uncommon discrimination. And that is the reason why a young buck with an intelligent-looking calf's head before him is somehow one of the saddest sights you can see. The head looks a sort of reproachfully at him with an et tu, brute expression. It is not perhaps entirely because of the whale is so excessively unctuous that landsmen seem to regard the eating of him with abhorrence. That appears to result in some way from the consideration before mentioned, i.e., that a man should eat a newly murdered thing of the sea and eat it too by its own light. But no doubt the first man that ever murdered an ox was regarded as a murderer. Perhaps he was hung, and if he had been put on his trial by oxen, he certainly would have been, and he certainly deserved it if any murderer does. Go to the meat market of a Saturday night and see the crowds of live bipeds staring up at the long rows of dead quadrupeds. Does not the sight take a tooth out of the cannibal's jaw? Cannibals? Who's not a cannibal? I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the Fiji that salted down a lean missionary in his cellar against a coming famine. It will be more tolerable for that provident Fiji, I say, in the day of judgment, than for thee, civilized and enlightened gourmand, who nailest geese to the ground and feastest on their bloated livers in thy pâté de foie gras. Mm-hmm. But Stubb, he eats the whale by its own light. Does he? And that is adding insult to injury, is it? Look at your knife handle there, my civilized and enlightened gourmand, dining off that roast beef. What is that handle made of? What but the bones of the brother of the very ox you're eating? What do you pick your teeth with after the devouring that fat goose? With a feather of the same fowl? And with what quill did the Secretary of the Society for the Suppression of Cruelty to Ganders formerly indict his circulars? It is only within the last month or two that society passed a resolution to patronize nothing but steel pens. Thank you. There you go.
We need to do a please clap, everybody did it.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah, I'm just like clap, applause.
All right. Well, that's all I had planned. Does anybody have other questions, comments? I don't know, complaints?
We're nope. Open to whatever. Group therapy time. Whatever.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite parts about this book, and I reread it like a couple months ago. It's just like how vivid the prose is. Like he's talking about like smashing open the whale's skull and, you know, like the brain is like pudding. It's just like there's such a strong imagery to it in almost every part of this book, and I feel like that's like one of the things that makes it so hard to translate to TV or movie, because as you read this book, you really do get brought on this journey, and it's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a beautifully written book, I think. But yeah, I did get to look at a lot of pictures of half cut open whales, and drew some of them. But yeah, just the scale of the thing that they were doing just seems so absurd. Like, these creatures are bigger than the ships that were catching them, you know. And these guys would go off for years and just like sail around and around and around, and not see their families, and you know. Hopefully, if everything worked out, they would be sending money, but many of them would die along the way. And you know, whale oil was used for perfume and for, as he said in here, you know, for lighting lamps,
coronations,
and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just the whole idea of it just seems incredibly, incredibly. Who made up this idea? I don't know. Like, who's the first guy that thought that this was like a thing you should do? I don't know.
Yeah. If you were going to assign a smell to the book, like, what do you think, having gone through the whole thing a bunch of different times and paid a lot of attention?
What smell?
Yeah, because you're working in sight, but what kind of smell do you think you'd give?
Man, nothing good. I mean, yeah, imagine, like, you know, what, 20, 30 guys on a ship who don't bathe, like, for, you know, months at a time. I mean, you know, they come ashore every few months or whatever to drop off the blubber. Because, yeah, there's these barrels and barrels of blubber that they harvest, you know.
Like, I don't know what whale blubber smells like. I kind of know what, like, stale blood smells like, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to think what the top one would be.
Any kind of rendering, like a plant, like any, like a...
Ocean.
Yeah, yeah, not good. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, the smell of decomposition, yeah. And,
Did you learn everything that you need to know about, like, whaling and everything?
I don't think, like...
I just, like, recently spoke to somebody who wrote a book about taxidermy, and they actually practiced taxidermy to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
well,
whoa,
if you're
commitment.
Really, if you're really sort of, like, literal-minded, you know, there's these articles, probably whole books, debunking Moby Dick as being inaccurate about whaling, but, like, that kind of misses the point. That's not really the point of art, you know. Like, this is not a how-to book. Like, you don't read this book and say, "Oh, I guess I'll go sail the seas and, like, catch me some whales." Like, that's not what you know. It's poetry, metaphors, shit like that, you know. So no,
I didn't learn videos, nothing.
I did listen. There was that there was a recent podcast called the Good Whale. Did anybody listen to this? It's a fucking horrible, another horrible story about a killer whale in captivity that they were trying to reacclimate into the wild. Yeah, it
didn't work.
No, he died. Yeah, but like, yeah, it was, yeah. So I did listen to that at some point during working on this, and nothing. Or like, you know, you hear about. Yeah, any kind of creature this size, like the dolphins, that go crazy because in captivity, because, you know, they communicate with echolocation, and the sonar, like, bounces off the sides of the tanks, and they go deaf and they go crazy, you know, like, it's not good. None of it's any good. Yeah. And well, here's what I learned. Like, Moby Dick is the hero of this book.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, I'm with you.
Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, we can loop it back to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
Where Leatherface is absolutely the hero of Texas Chainsaw
Massacre.
He's the good guy.
Yeah.
And those asshole college kids are the bad guys.
Fucking,
you know?
Hippies.
Yeah.
What kind of whale is Moby Dick? Sperm whale?
Yeah, he's a sperm
whale.
Sperm whale, yeah. Yep.
I mean, I think there's a whole section where you do the different classifications of whales in the book, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot.
I think it literally is called cetology.
Yeah, there's a cetology chapter, but yeah, there's a bunch of illustrations like this, like of all the, there's so many different kinds of whales. And yeah, I drew a bunch, 3, 4, or 5 different kinds of whales throughout the book. Not just sperm.
Oh, sorry. How many illustrations did you do?
Like 90? 90. Yeah. But yeah, it's about 90 illustrations.
What got you into drawing originally? Like, was it just doodling as a kid, or like?
I've always drawn. Yeah, I don't remember ever not drawing. It's
you
just
seem like someone that should be like doodling in your notebook.
I should. Yeah, I should be doing that right now, rather than yapping up here. Yeah.
Do you have your own white whale?
My own.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Like, I'm damn curious to hear about that one now, too.
No, you stumped me. I don't have the delusions of grandeur of some of these people in this book. I have a lot more smaller, more manageable goals, like selling a painting, like paying some bills. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable being like behind the scenes, or like not the focus of attention. Like, I don't need to be the hero of anything, really. Yeah. I should be where you guys are, not up here, is what I'm saying.
Did you ever have the delusions of grandeur, though? I mean, you know, like, you're a seasoned writer and everything now, but like when you're, say, like...
What you mean is old.
Seasoned. I said seasoned. I'm nice. Yeah. But no, like, you're like part of the grind and everything. Like, most of... I'm part of the grind and everything now. I'm not going to be J.K. Rowling, not that I want to be. But did you ever have a moment where you were like, I want to be that big-ass writer or painter or whatever, like, where everyone's clamoring over your stuff?
I don't think so. Well, I got it. I mean, the writing thing came later for me.
Yeah,
I mean,
you started with painting.
Yeah, yeah, it was always painting. It still is. I mean, in a backwards way, this gets me out of writing books and back into making art. It's just that the art is, it's sort of like a collage project where, like, you know, the words are just part of the, like, the a visual thing that I'm moving around the images. I don't have any idea of a future or like a goal. Like, it's all just project to project. So like when I'm working on this, that's all there is. Like, if I have anything that kind of like stands me apart from other people I've met, is like, I have absolute focus. If I get into a thing, I get tunnel vision, and that's all I do. So the reason I got this done is I got really into it, and I just did it day and night, and that's all I did pretty much, you know?
As I said, you messaged me, and then a couple of weeks later, you're just like sending me image after image after image, and I was like, Jesus Christ, he's turning them out.
Doing it like chronologically, or were you like skipping around in the book?
Oh, as far as the drawings, you mean? I think I skipped around a bit. Well, I went through the book backwards and forwards. Like, I don't know, I probably read it, and I also was listening to the audiobook. Like, I would take it into headphones when I was like I bike around everywhere. I was riding around Chicago listening to Moby Dick all the time when I wasn't reading it. But I would kind of double back sometimes. And then when I put it into the design program and started doing the text, then I would see where there were gaps that I needed, like an illustration or something. But yeah, it wasn't all the way straight through. Yeah.
You're just kind of like immersed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the first one, though.
Was it the
cover?
The whale on the cover is the first drawing I did, yeah.
That's great.
Yes.
The Newbury Library downtown has a vast collection of Moby Dick editions. Do you know if they got their hands on this one yet?
let's hit those motherfuckers up.
Well, yeah. this is the person to talk to. I did participate
in a fellowship there briefly.
Hit yeah. them up. Hit up Will Hansen, if you know who he is.
No, I all right.
Okay. I'll hit up.
This is a job for my publisher, yeah. I did get to participate in what they did, one of those readings of Moby Dick.
Oh, yeah, when they did the exhibit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like where you, yeah. it was a marathon. It was like 20-something hours. Yeah, I read a chapter. There, yeah, that's a cool place. Yeah.
I read a very boring chapter.
You did?
It was at like 3 a.m.
I don't remember what I read. It was a few years ago, but yeah, it was cool. It was just a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide for black and white over color?
A few things. I mean, so I've done a bunch of books with all my books have illustrations in them. But like I'm usually not super happy with the way color reproduces in books, unless you make an art book, which makes it an art. Like, and this is not that the project was to make a book that's accessible, you know, and affordable to as many people as possible. But yeah, then we're getting to $40 or $50 books rather than. I mean, this book is $25, which is, you know, it's still accept for something that. You know, long is probably fine, you know, but yeah, part of it is money. And then, yeah, like color reproduction is just, it's not great. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're trusting like some like underpriced kid in front of a machine to press a button, you know, which is what like, you know, print on demand is,
yeah,
you know, like, so that's one of the things. Yeah, I want it to be, you know, as foolproof as possible. I mean, I remember, so like I was real late to computers even. Like I didn't think, I wasn't into photography. I come from painting, and paintings don't really reproduce, you know. I had to make my peace with that mm-hmm. like a photograph of a painting could be acceptable. It's not really acceptable, but like I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like in a book, I think like a black and white, and also like for printing costs, like grayscale, it doesn't cost any more to print this than if it had no images in it.
Yeah.
It's the same exact ink, you know, same process. Yeah. Did you have?
Yeah. So I have your other book. That's when you're a cab driver. Uh-huh. It said on the back. I noticed that you used to drive in Boston too.
Yes.
Did you used to live in Boston? Like, did
unfortunately, yes.
Well, we used to live in Boston too, but I know it's like.
Congratulations for getting out. It's a horrible, horrible place.
Did you have a connection to the sea at all, or did you do like they have like the whale watching tours like out in Boston?
And I got sick and threw up in high school on one of those trips. That's. Yeah, you were asking me earlier what I learned about whaling. Like, I wouldn't have made a good whaler. I get seasick. No, I don't like. I don't eat seafood.
That is true.
No, I got dragged. So I'm from the Soviet Union, and we moved to the Boston area when I was seven in the 70s. So I've never ever claimed Boston as where I'm from. Yeah. It's a place I had to spend some time. I didn't choose it.
What brought you to Chicago?
Art school, originally, in 1990. Cool. I went to the School of the Art Institute. Oh. Like everybody else who went to art school here. Yeah. Art school, yeah.
And yet you have no accent for any of these places.
Well, because I was an immigrant. That's, you know, like,
you
that's...
You don't even have that.
Yeah, but I was too young to have a Russian accent. I was seven, yeah. Mm. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Luckily, I didn't get stuck with a fucking Boston accent.
I know. It would have been hilarious if you had one. Because isn't that where, like...
Thank goodness for small blessings.
Wait,
yeah.
Where have you lived the longest now? Here or Boston?
Oh, here by
now?
Far, yeah.
Yeah.
I only altogether lived in Boston for, like, 14 years? 13, okay. 14? I've lived here over 30 now. Yeah. So I got here in 1990... graduated from SAIC in 93, moved back to Boston, drove a cab, was reminded about everything I hated about Boston, got really depressed, and in 97 moved back here for good. Yeah, and that's my story.
So do you
and I'm sticking
Chicago
to it.
Was your home?
That's great.
As home?
Yeah. Do what do you say you're Chicago?
Yeah, a lot more than anything else. Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah, I feel like I'm kind of from nowhere, but like, because, like, I couldn't, well, nobody in their right mind would want to go back to Russia at this point, now or ever in the history of Russia, basically, but, yeah,
you know. You've never been back.
No, never been back, no. No, and I've, yeah, I have no close family left, they're all gone, you know, from there. So yeah, Chicago is as close to home as I've got, yeah. And yeah, to whatever extent people know about me, I'm very associated with this city, I think. Because a lot of like the art and writing I do is about Chicago, yeah.
I know you guys talked about not any movies or films kind of portraying the book, uh-huh. But if there was one scene that you could pick that you could maybe direct yourself to really bring it to life, what would that scene be?
I don't think I can answer it. Not a filmmaker. You
know, like, I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Yeah. Maybe Mallory can answer this. What scene would you do?
I don't know, actually. Mm-mm.
Did you have one?
I haven't read the book.
Oh, you haven't?
But, I mean,
I know where you could buy one.
Yeah, there's a place right there in the corner of this very room.
Yeah, I know where you can get a copy. Yeah.
I love film, but sometimes it's hard to really capture that essence sometimes, I think. Mm-hmm. So it would be just intriguing if you guys are avid readers to kind of really bring something to life that everyone can kind of really enjoy.
No, I mean, I think
you do that with Moby Dick, though.
No, this book, the true, you know, medium that it belongs in is in print, in a book.
Yeah.
That's where it belongs. Some things, I think, you know, as a, like a sort of a cliche or whatever, like bad books make good movies and good movies rarely make good movies, you know? And Moby Dick is a very good book, but it's, you have to read it, I think. So, sorry, it's a kind of a non-answer, but yeah.
As a filmmaker, I will say, I'm not a filmmaker. If I was a filmmaker, as I was when I first started all this shit, I would focus on all the tangents. Like, I just love every time he goes off in a very strange direction, has absolutely nothing to do with, like, the action. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, like, a 10-minute scene just about every kind of harpoon that there ever was.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah, I've, like, one of the...
And he's got good illustrations of harpoons.
I've got harpoons. I've got a lot of sailor's knots in there. I've got all the different some of the different knives that you use to cut the blubber out of whales. And they just look like medieval torture instruments, which is pretty fun, you know?
As a side thing, you could have learned to, tie the sailor's knots and showed us.
Oh.
Oh, so it could be like a fucking magic show.
Yeah.
So because this is not interesting. So you've been bored this whole time, Mallory? I'm sorry I didn't entertain you enough.
No, I'm good.
Fucking millennials and their short attention spans.
Like, tie me a sailor's knot. Show me you did your research.
No, I don't know how many. I could probably tie 2 or 3 knots. How many can you tie?
None.
Right. Not your department as a publisher.
Not my department, no.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
I'm not sure what my department actually is, so whatever.
You're like the boss lady.
Mm. Everyone keeps telling me that.
The first time that you read Moby Dick, where were you at? In Chicago?
In Chicago, yes. Yes.
I read it for the first time outside of Boston, which feels like the right, like...
Right, because they start out from New Bedford, outside of Boston.
A book, like, when you were talking about riding on your bicycle through Chicago, like, I was wondering, like, what that's like. I've never thought of doing that before. And if there's something about Chicago that kind of resonated with the story for you as, like, a place to experience Moby Dick.
I don't know if, I mean, well, you know, bike, I take long bike, I go everywhere on my bike. So, like, the feeling of being at sea in the not literal sense, you know, and Chicago is a very big place, you know, yeah, you can go miles and miles and yeah, you know, I've taken 20 or 30 mile bike rides here, you know, that you can easily, you know. and not even get to the borders of the city. So yeah, the vastness of it, and like that's definitely communicated throughout this book, is that they're stuck on this vessel, like in an endless bodies of water, you know? So I don't have water. Like, actually, I bike all the time. I almost never bike by the lake.
I was gonna ask that one.
I'm strictly a street bicyclist.
So you're never stopping and like watching Lake Michigan or hanging by the Chicago River.
No, I don't fucking like nature. You know me.
That's true. That is very true.
I'm a creature of the city.
Down by the lake.
Yeah. No, just in bars and restaurants. Lots of whales. Yes. Yes. The creature I like to watch most is human.
If you do read his other books, you'll understand that.
Yeah. Yes, Bill.
I was just wondering, since the thing about the book being digressive and going in all these tangents came up several times.
Yeah.
Do you, it's probably a question for both of you, do you feel it's a book that could actually be read out of order, or would that be going too far? Is that a...
I think
I'm
so.
I'm just curious.
You probably could.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody probably could, like, figure out some kind of conceptual art game where you could shuffle the order, you know?
I mean, I'm not saying Tarantino on it, but,
yeah. Yeah, you could probably do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because really, we mentioned the A story of this guy getting on a whaling ship and then, you know, in the end, it kills the captain. I mean, that's like a tiny fragment of this book, you know? And then there's all these episodes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think once they get on the ship, they kind of lose sense of time anyways, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many actual years. It probably takes place over a couple of years, I would imagine. But
and it's not like it's building any extreme, like, momentum with each, like, chapter either.
Yeah, they're on this, obviously, you know, this quest that's bound to fail, like, we know from the start that it's not going to end well, you know, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I get that.
Right, yeah.
Maybe because I know how it ends, but, like, I don't know that you ever...
Well, you spoiled it for everybody else now.
Sorry. No, but, like, it's a happy ending. It's like, if you choose to look at it a certain way, I think it's a happy ending. Plus, the narrator lives. I mean, like, the narrator doesn't die. I mean, he's telling us a story. Yeah, he makes it back.
Yeah. Moby Dick lives.
Yeah. Yeah, allegedly, yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
You could be a lawyer.
Did Queequeg survive?
No. I think Queequeg... Yeah. Well, no, he survives the thing with the coffin. Yeah, they build him a coffin, but then he recovers.
Yeah.
That's funny. I actually don't remember if Queequeg died or not. Mm-hmm. He was definitely in on the battle, where Ahab is taken away. That's the thing about it, is like that. It's not
those
even that important.
Details.
Like, it doesn't even matter. You know.
This is more of an atmospheric book more than everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's as you know, your people say, it's a vibe.
It's a vibe.
Yeah.
It's
Moby Dick. It's a mood.
Okay, so I was going with vibe. You went mood, okay? You're the millennial now.
So I'm an honorary millennial now?
You're an honorary millennial, yes.
Thank you for accepting me. I feel so seen. How's that for you?
Are you going to ask me, like, what your aura is?
That's what they say
now?
Right?
Yeah.
It's so fucked up that I know any of these expressions. I don't know.
He bartends and he hangs here all the time. He's forced to deal with that.
Yeah,
And he talks with me on the frequent. It's my fault.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Finished. You went through it.
I didn't drink this whole thing tonight. I swear. And I am... really not an alcoholic.
Sometimes you can go through an entire day without drinking one drop, right?
Most days. Yeah, you know, this is a special day. And yeah, so it's probably a good place to end. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for coming. And yeah. be happy to sell you some books if anybody wants to still buy one.